You're listening to 99.1 WQRTLP, and welcome to Radio Free Book Club for May 2023. I'm Ken Honeywell. I'm a writer and reader from Indianapolis, and we're talking today about the latest hard-boiled detective novel from the incredibly prolific Walter Mosley. It's called Every Man a King. It's a follow-up to his 2018 novel, Down the River Unto the Sea. This is Mosley's second novel featuring ex-cop Joe King Oliver. It's the character we'll certainly talk about a lot in this episode. The Mystery Writers of America honored Down the River Unto the Sea with the Edgar Award for the best novel of that year. So Every Man a King has a pretty noble pedigree. We're going to get into it. But speaking of noble pedigrees, everyone here is a multiple time Radio Free Book Clubber. So let's see who's around today and do some introductions. Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig Von Dalen. I'm an architect, a parent of six, and I just kind of hang around.
Yeah, you're noted for that, Craig. You just don't do much at all.
No.
Yeah.
I'm Christine Hudson. Happy to be back. Indianapolis, born and raised, and then I work in marketing and tech, and I also spend a lot of time just hanging around. I do very little.
Thank you, Christine. Yeah. I'm glad I'm surprised we don't run into each other.
Yeah.
I get out just
seems to be here.
Yeah. Steve Woods, also a well-known slacker.
Yeah. Steve Woods, I'm a financial advisor, married three kids. My oldest is going to IU next year.
So what?
Man.
Got one leaving the nest.
Wow.
It's crazy.
IU, yeah. Are you going to put a tracker on them? Or?
She'll be fine.
All right.
You know, I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before, Steve, but one thing that should make everybody jealous of Steve is he lives next door to a bookstore.
Mm-hmm. Which bookstore? No, never mind. You don't have to.
Wild Geese in Franklin, Indiana.
Now everyone will be at his door tomorrow.
Right?
Hey, Steve.
That's
also
fine.
There's a bar across the street.
Oh, wow. Oh, God.
Location.
Yeah. I've got a liquor store a couple doors down, so. That's
I've
pretty
got
good.
A new coffee shop.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Very nice. Well, thanks, everybody. And just a note before we just start the discussion, Every Man a King is a mystery novel. And if you have not read it, please be advised that there will be spoilers. This is a book club, not a book review. This is not Columbo. So if you don't want to know who done it, this would be a good time to tune out and hit the pause button. Come back after you've read the book. You can always find this and other episodes of Radio Free Book Club on Mixcloud, Spotify, Apple, just about anywhere you stream podcasts. And we hope you'll come back and listen. But fair warning, we're going to start spoiling it. All right, let's get going. Well, first, before we talk about the book, let's talk for a minute about the genre. This is crime fiction. It's mystery. It's hard-boiled detective fiction, kind of in the tradition of Dashiell Hammett or Raymond Chandler. Are any of you readers of this kind of fiction, of this kind of hard-boiled detective novel, or just kind of mysteries in general?
Well, I'll speak up since everybody's looking around at each other. I love mysteries. I'm not sure I'm a big detective novel guy, but I've always really enjoyed mysteries since I was a kid, and I find them fabulously interesting to read, and always trying to figure out what's actually happening or what's going to happen or try to solve the mystery before the end of the book.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I also love mysteries. I probably read mysteries the most. It's like if comfort food were a book, my comfort food is like mysteries and thrillers, which I think is quite, a thriller is quite a lot different than what we have here. But yeah, I read a lot of mysteries. It's nice to find a new author because after I've read enough authors' mysteries, you start, it's a formula.
Right,
I start to realize like, okay, I know who it is and I know who they think it is and who it's not going to be. And so I can sort of see the twists and turns coming. So it's nice to read. I hadn't read anything by Mosley before, so really nice to read sort of a more like noir crime novel and less of like a blockbuster thriller.
Yeah.
Mystery novel.
Yeah, it is quite a different, you know, almost just a completely different genre.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's a different genre.
Yeah. 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 Steve, how about you?
I am not. I'm not a big fan of it. Had you recommended this to pick up, I would have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a big mystery guy. And this may foreshadow my opinions here today.
Yeah. Well. Good. Well. Maybe we'll have something to duke out here. How about Walter Mosley? Anyone ever read any other Walter Mosley? I mean, he's written like, I don't know. I counted like 56 books or something in the front of this book. Any of you read anything else of his? Anybody read Down the River Unto the Sea, the first one of the King Oliver mysteries?
No, this is the first book I've ever read by him. I did, from his picture on the jacket, I recognize him. I'm sure I've like seen interviews of him before. So.
Well, probably his best known work is Devil in a Blue Dress, which was a movie, a Denzel Washington movie some years ago. That's his Easy Rollins is his detective. He's done a lot of those books. I did read Down the River Unto the Sea just because I felt like I should before, leading this discussion. But I don't think I had ever read any other Walter Mosley, and I'm not a big reader of this kind of fiction. I've read some of the classics, but I'm not even a really big mystery or thriller reader. That's not a lot of what I read. So what do you think? What were your overall impressions of the book? What'd you like about it? What'd you not like about it, Craig?
Well, I think that Christine was right. It's more of a noir detective novel than anything else. If it were a murder mystery, we didn't really know that there was a murder, or for that matter, that it was a mystery until like third to the last chapter of the book. And then, here's the dude that did that killed somebody. So it was kind of more of a following a detective's life as he was trying to work through the two cases. I really liked it. It was, first of all, the writing and the dialogue was very interesting to me. The character development was also really interesting to me, and some of the characters were fascinating to me. It was hard to follow. Like, I still don't know what the caskets were all about. Does anybody know what that was all about or what that had to do with the story? But it was still a fascinating book. Some of the concepts that were discussed, like the three-fifths group and all that, I found that very interesting. I'm a little upset about one piece of the book. He flies into Lexington, Kentucky, and he calls it the place where Muhammad Ali was born. Muhammad Ali was not born in Lexington, Kentucky. He was born in Louisville, Kentucky.
Thank you, Craig.
So that annoyed me, and you guys know how I am about like things being accurate.
Yeah,
right.
Small detail.
I think I liked it. I really enjoyed the book. And by the way, it was a page turner too, because as I started getting into it, I was like, I got to know what's going on next.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Christine, what did you think?
So I didn't love it. What I did really like about it was I thought the prose was just beautiful. I think Mosley also writes some poetry, so I could sort of see how that spills over into his prose. I'm glad I'm not the only person that had never read his work, because I felt like I should have, but I just hadn't. So this is my first Walter Mosley book. And I thought the language was really beautiful. And as far as a mystery plot, it was so convoluted that I don't know what happened either, Craig.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
what happened. I was just along for the ride. There are so many characters with crazy names. And like, sorry, have I met, Turquoise Linforth yet? Like, I could not keep anyone straight. And then the saddest part was like, so I don't hate that in a book. Like, I don't hate not being able to keep the plot or character straight. Like our last book, Perilous Graves, or in February. What I didn't like about this was that I didn't care to keep it straight. Something about it just didn't, something about the mystery of it didn't intrigue me in the beginning. And then the second mystery was introduced and I was like, I care less about this one. So then there's like two mysteries on the line. I don't care about any one or any of the mysteries, and I didn't want to unravel it. The language was beautiful and I loved that, but I actually bought Down the River Unto the Sea. And I returned it. I didn't even start it.
Yeah.
I thought I would burn through this in like an afternoon.
Yeah.
And then I was going to read Down the River Unto the Sea, and I didn't.
Not what happened.
I just returned it. I feel really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about it was just a miss for me. I think it was, I thought the characters were quite flat, which I know is like sort of crime noir novels are more very stoic characters and very flat characters, but I still, stoic isn't the word I'm looking for, very deadpan, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the whole point of sort of a noir novel or film, but I still just couldn't bring these sort of deadpan characters to life. And I didn't, I sort of didn't relate with any of them. That was a long answer. I'm sorry, but yeah.
No, we like long answers.
Yeah.
Steve, I think you've already expressed a little bit of dismay.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like this was an assignment that I had to kind of slog through. I read it on spring break. I felt like I'd had to kind of trudge through. So I could be prepared to talk. I liked the characters. The fact that they were all so fantastically unconnected. Like his grandmother dating the world's richest man.
Right.
And I liked the grandmother. I mean, there were some really sweet parts there where she always did her dishes and was very down to earth. But everybody was so unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, the daughter was brilliant and kind of kept him in check. He has a relationship with his ex-wife and is helping her husband, who's also a huge Wall Street, you know, person. And everybody's, you know, his other friend was a special forces, you know, black ops guy. Everybody was just at the very top of their game, and they were all connected in a really convenient way. I was just like, come on.
Yeah.
It just didn't have to all be wrapped up.
Disbelief to suspend. And yeah. I just couldn't suspend it.
Well, it's really interesting. Christine, you mentioned these two cases you didn't care about. He was not working for very nice people, for very worthy causes. And I think, you know, I think one of my questions is, you know, he obviously was living by some kind of code, right? He had some kind of moral code because he had a history of at least abetting some bad people accomplish some things they wanted to accomplish that were not always within the law. But he also prided himself on being a policeman. So what was his moral code?
I think one of the things he, especially as it pertains to like when he had the interaction with the woman on the airplane, mm-hmm. it was more of a moral code that was more important to him was compassion to individuals in times when they had trouble. He seemed to have his own idea of what right and wrong was, but it was more focused on love and compassion for people who he felt were either wronged or were in pain and needed help. So he was kind of that guy.
Yeah. To come in. Fairness, I think.
Yeah, fairness, yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the whole reason he took the case of the, like, super right-wing extremist guy was because he, even though obviously this guy hated him on a molecular level, Joe King, Oliver, I feel like there's so many names in this book, even the main character. I'm like, what is his name? Is it Joe? Is it Oliver? Is it King? Oliver King, King Oliver. Anyways, the whole reason he took that case was because even though he didn't agree with this extremist, he also didn't think he'd been rightfully imprisoned and figured it's worth checking out because even though they don't agree, he's still a human that I guess deserves.
Well, it's a story of redemption though, because he had basically given up on all those beliefs based upon his relationship with his wife. And when he did, he was starting to be alienated by the people that he was supporting through those beliefs. And they put him in jail for it, and that's the reason he was there. And I think Joe started to realize that, and that's why he felt more and more compassion towards him. He obviously felt compassion towards his wife, for sure.
So. Yeah.
He felt a little more than compassion.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot that he felt.
You can call it compassion.
Beyond that, yeah.
Right, we can call it that for a PG audience.
But she managed to get him, to convince him that he was very wrong, and then he started to backtrack on those beliefs.
But then why did he just throw a fit the first time he saw Joe?
I don't know. Like, that's really confusing.
Yeah, that did not know. That was a problem for me. If he had really changed his beliefs, he wouldn't have said those things. Yeah. I don't think. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Unless he thought someone was listening. And he needed to still...
Well, he knew someone was listening because he put the fan in front of the microphone.
Well, that was the second time, though.
Yeah.
The first time...
But if he knew someone was listening and he couldn't have done anything, that's... I'll buy that, Craig.
Maybe he didn't have a fan.
I'll say that.
We'll buy it.
I'll give him that.
Maybe he didn't have the fan. He had to requisition
the fan.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve? What's compelling about this character?
Well, you know, he did want to help Quiller out, right? If Quiller had been wrongfully accused, he had that kind of yen to right the wrong.
Yeah, he's got a sense of justice.
Yeah, and there was an interesting exchange between his daughter and Joe at one point, and the daughter is like, why would you help somebody that hates you, that hates me, that hates people of our color? And his response was, if he's been wrongfully jailed, then something must be done. And so I liked that.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't enough for me to get behind it. It would have been very, very, you know, we find out a little later on that Quiller is married to a woman of color, which makes that character certainly more complex. And then I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if he had this alt-right stance in order to really achieve something for the betterment of African Americans or all of the people that he purports to hate? What if he was like a double agent? And that would have, like, I kept waiting for, like, that would be very interesting, because he's, you know, he's married to a woman of color, and she didn't seem to be bothered by it because she saw him for who he really was.
Right.
And then we never really found out who he was.
Yeah. Because
or I missed it completely.
Because he allegedly offed himself. I don't know that he did that clear.
Yeah, I don't know if he might have been doing that, Steve, and I think that might be why he ended up where he was and also ended up dead.
Well, yeah, he had that file that was going to rat out everybody.
Yeah.
But it also was going to rat out everybody on all sides. It was not exclusive to just certain types of people.
Yeah. Right.
But I think they could have done a better job of playing. The problem that the book had, and I still like the book, but was confusing the two cases. If it was just a case on Quiller, it would have been a far better book. Because, frankly, some of the stuff, like with Quiller, and I'm going to go back to this three-fifths thing, the three-fifths vote thing, because, frankly, if you're a progressive liberal in city of Indianapolis, your votes only count three-fifths now. The Republicans have won because of gerrymandering. I mean, that has happened in our society regardless. And if we could figure out a way to point that out to people and get them to understand that, maybe we could fix some of the problems that we have. I don't know if it would work or not. But regardless, just pointing out these concepts that they have and how flawed and how wrong they are and how they actually, to a certain extent, have affected our society anyway. And he could have done that across the entire novel and created a mystery about this particular Quiller fellow. I think it would have been a more effective novel. I still liked it. I think the writing was interesting and it was still a page turner for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of his points in the earlier book, Down the River Unto the Sea, was that we think about a detective has one case at a time. And typically detectives like him will have more than one case at a time. So I don't know if that is just kind of like built into what this character, what the structure of this character is. But I agree. I think the cases got really confused. And I will say, I think, Christine, did you bring up the coffins?
No,
I didn't, because I was completely confused by him.
I think that was the coffins were all about meeting that guy who was the partner of the guy who got murdered by Quiller or something like that.
Is that what it was?
I think it was just to meet that guy.
So I can buy that level of intricacy for one case. Like, yeah. So towards the end of this book, I was thinking I should have gotten one of those like pin boards that detectives have where you put a pin in someone and then connect the string.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to like understand all of the inner workings of this novel, which I don't dislike that, but I think it's hard to pull off a really intricate plot and a lot of characters and two cases in one novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, it didn't quite come together for me. Maybe it's a me problem.
I don't know, Ken. Jim Rockford never had more than one case at a time.
No, I mean, I think most of your TV detectives only had one case at a time.
And he could only handle one.
Yeah. I mean, Columbo, he was full-time on whatever he was doing.
By the way, yeah, he was making dinner for the victim's wife. Yeah. I mean, he was doing all kinds of stuff. That guy was everywhere.
Oh. So, was there one of those cases? Was one more compelling than the other? The Quiller one, you think, was
definitely
Craig?
Quiller.
Anybody else?
Mm. Yeah, I was more interested in Quiller. Yeah. I couldn't have cared less about the heating oil or whatever.
Yeah, but diesel. You know, that was actually more of the story.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I feel like he spent most of his time, and they were connected somehow in the end, right? No?
I don't think so. Maybe, I don't know.
No.
I don't remember.
He had a quick ending with the heating oil.
Yeah.
But the heating oil one was basically just character development for Joe because it was showing how much he loved his daughter. That he was going to be, he'd set aside all of his animus towards his ex-wife and her husband, that he would be willing to help them because he loved his daughter so much.
Yeah. Now, it's not super explicit as to why he's divorced or what happened. But I will say this, the very opening of Down the River Unto the Sea is like a wow. It's like he gets sent off to meet this woman in her apartment and to maybe arrest her. And he comes to the apartment and she says, oh, no, come in. That's my boyfriend. I'm moving out of my boyfriend's house. I'm not stealing stuff. Mm. This is all a big mistake. Well, of course, Joe's weakness is women.
Mm. Yeah.
And so they go at it right there. Of course, this is being filmed. And so he's blackmailed. He's thrown into prison. You know, they show his wife the video. Of course, they've edited it to look like, you know, he was not seduced or it wasn't consensual or anything like that. It was made to look like he had raped this woman. And he got sent to prison, he got beat up, he got put in solitary confinement. That's how he came to be where he is, divorced detective. And it really is kind of a strikingly, it's an intriguing opening, whether you like the character or not after doing that. But yeah, this didn't have that for me. And I think it was really, really complicated. The first one was really complicated too. Hmm. And I thought maybe having read it, this one would be less so, but it was really complicated.
So to be honest, that's part of the reason I just returned Down the River Unto the Sea was because I think I did read that first passage. I was trying to decide if I wanted to read Down the River Unto the Sea first or this one first. Because I was like really excited. I figured I would read both of these in like the blink of an eye. And then started this one, I think, and I was like, maybe I should go back to the first one. So I went back to the first one and I was like, oh, no, I don't know. Let's go back. And then I read a summary of the first one and I was like, okay, I will, or not even a summary, but just like like the inside cover, right?
Yeah.
And so halfway through this book, I knew good and well I wasn't going to read Down the River Into the Sea, mostly because I don't like, and this, again, probably a me thing, I don't like how he writes his women characters. Mm. I couldn't have withstood reading Down the River Into the Sea, which was totally centered around his interaction and sort of punishment for being with this woman. I didn't like his, I feel like all of his women characters are like some sort of temptress, like Eve with an apple. Is that how it went in the Bible?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I felt like all of his female characters were like some sort of Eve with an apple. Even his daughter, which really grossed me out. It felt so icky to me. And the daughter, I thought she was like 12 at first. And then I was like, why is she working in a crime office? Because the way that he wrote her, I thought was so childish. Mm-hmm. And then she was like calling him daddy. And I was like, I don't like any of these women. I don't know. It was weird. It was the type of character, the type of female character that men write. And I just wasn't into it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thanks for slurring all of us.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine.
All of you were to write. No, I just like, it was weird. I have been reading more books by women lately, and there's just a vast difference between the way women write women, or at least the authors I read, and the way that Walter Mosley wrote his women, which was all just like slinky ladies. I was like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was weird. It made me uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable. That's what it was. Yeah. I felt like there was a creepy old man watching me, and then I would flip to the back and Walter was like looking at me, and I was like, oh God, sorry, Walter. Like, no offense to him. I'm sure he's great. But it made me uncomfortable. His whole dynamic with his daughter and with every woman he crossed, even the grandmother, like, yeah. I don't know. It was weird. I don't know if it was just me.
Yeah.
It did kind of literally sexualize them.
Literally.
Yeah.
In every passage, yeah. Every description of his character descriptions, I thought were just so extra. But like the men's character descriptions were very sort of objective, yeah, and rational, yeah, and focused on personalities. And the women were like, she was wearing a tight dress. Yeah. I'm like, great. This tells me a lot.
Yeah, he does. He described their clothing, yeah, whereas the men, like Loopy. What is Loopy's head shaped like? Loopy's head was shaped like something. And yeah, it was like a... Or their, yeah, this color of their skin or whatever.
Yes, like so many inventive, yeah, descriptions for the men. And then for the women, he's like, it was a beautiful woman.
She was wearing a dress. The hemline wasn't too seductive, but right, it was form-fitting and white.
Six paragraphs, mm-hmm, later, he's like, so back to the story. Like, yeah, ew. What's this mess? Right. Like, what is this adding?
But what about so towards the end, when that one... It was another like black ops type group, mm, sent, uh-huh, a woman to protect him.
Oh, yeah. Like,
was that his attempt at some sort of redemption?
No, because then he sexualized her too.
Yeah, he did her too. Yeah, yeah, he did. He did. Yes, he did.
Repeatedly.
Yes,
yeah,
he did.
She was his new friend, but. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well,
did I get? I must have mixed. I may have been checked out by that time. I thought
I was. Well, no,
she was like the strong one.
She was supposed to.
She was definitely that.
She was. She was a badass.
I would read a whole book with. I think her name is Olia or Olivia or something. Right. Yeah. I would read a whole book of her. She was my favorite character.
She was loyal too.
Yeah, she
didn't.
Great.
Yeah, she was there to do a job and was very specific to it.
I liked her.
Okay. Well, I want to defend a couple of points here, and you guys tell me where I'm wrong. I would say all of that description of all of the people is because he was a detective and he has to be super observant.
Observant, right.
Right. So whereas it does seem extra, I'm not sure that it doesn't fit the character.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that's what made it a detective model.
So my question is, can we just look at this as a cartoon? I mean, can it just be...
It's a graphic novel.
Yeah. At a certain point of in reading this, it felt cartoonish. I think it was when my grandmother got shot in the butt. I was like...
Yeah.
I was literally laughing. I'm like, I don't know if this is supposed to be funny. But, and that was, like, what, almost at the very end of the book? It started to feel cartoonish.
Well, not but only like, had she been shot in the butt, she was kind of into it.
Yeah.
Like, But, like, the subject matter didn't feel cartoonish, and the writing didn't feel cartoonish. It was just the characters that, to me, I was like, is this supposed to be for real?
It's kind of that's why I said graphic novel, because it was almost like it was written to be, to have a really good artist go through and do panels.
It'd be beautiful. Each
different piece.
Towards the end of the book at 296, I mean, this is where, when I was in the Bahamas, I think I burped in my mouth a little bit. There was a sentence that says, now he's hooking up with this woman and says, the bed was too small, but we made it work.
Ew,
there was something very wrong about what we were doing, but we dropped the guilt on the floor along with our clothes.
Yeah. This is what I meant by uncomfortable. I mean, it's just like,
come on.
Yeah, it's graphic novel stuff, though.
Yeah.
That panel would be in black and white.
Also, this isn't believable.
With the clothes on the floor. Yeah.
Why this woman's husband just died?
Well, but he'd been incarcerated for a pretty considerable period of time.
No, just a couple months, I think.
Well, but they'd been not really talking.
Oh yeah,
They had, she'd been hiding.
Or... I don't know. It was confusing.
Joe got around. I think that was the third woman in the novel that he was intimate with.
He did. He did get around.
He must be.
He got around in the first book as well. Yeah, that's his weakness. The ladies. Yeah. That's his weakness.
But that makes him a detective. That's part of it. I mean, Jim Rockford.
Right. I mean, and that's kind of why I'm asking. Are we expecting too much of this? Are we asking too much of it for it to be more realistic?
Hey, there's a reason I liked it, because I don't ask a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I had really high expectations of a very sort of serious crime fiction novel. And for some reason, it didn't feel serious. I didn't need to know about his women. I don't know. I just wanted to know about Quiller. That's really all I wanted. I thought it was going to be a very, hard crime fiction novel. Wasn't expecting so many characters. And wasn't expecting, honestly, to dislike Joe King Oliver as much as I did.
And by the way, he had... You were confused about his names, but he also gave himself a lot of pseudonyms throughout the book.
Yeah.
So.
His name kept changing. Yeah. Everyone's names kept changing.
A new name for every burner phone he had.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And woman, maybe.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
So I just want to read some character names. Melkorth Frost, Bexley Terrell. Henri Tourneau, he was a young cop.
Yeah.
Augustine Antrobus, Sola Prendergast, Forthright Jorgensen, Gladstone Palmer. Why is he doing that? And does it make the characters easier to remember, harder to remember?
Because he gave everybody a name. He gave the woman that he sat next to in an airplane.
And right.
He had to find names for everybody, and you just can't go with Joe Smith and Susie Rockefeller every time. So
I went to school with five guys named Forthright.
Did you?
Are you serious?
Very common name.
Right.
Did you go to a boarding school on the East Coast somewhere?
Steve went to Wabash.
Oh, Wabash.
Oh,
that's right.
I thought the names were cute. That felt very sort of crime noir to me. Like a detective picks up the phone and it's, Bella Gothright. That's from The Sims. But
Turquoise.
Turquoise is his second cousin. It felt like I thought the names were cute. It didn't help me keep track of anyone. And by that point, I was kind of checked out. Or not checked out, but kind of tired of trying to figure out what was happening. But I did think that the names, the complicated names, felt very much like a black and white noir film. So I liked it. I liked the names. I also really liked a lot of the small interactions in those really short passages where he's describing his dreams. I thought that was probably sort of more indicative of how a detective's mind might work, more so than she was wearing a low cut dress or, his glasses were orange. I thought all those little interactions were interesting, and I feel like they all sort of illuminated something later. And especially if you feel like a lot of times when you're solving a complex problem or have a lot on your mind, it's helpful to make small talk because someone might say something that triggers a thought or feeling or connection. So I thought that worked really well. I liked the small connections. I don't know that these people needed a name, but to me that felt very much like a sort of breadcrumb trail that I like to see in a mystery novel. That alone, I think, would have been enough. The amount of names and the amount of subplots and sort of superfluous descriptions.
So do you think those little interactions, like with the woman on the plane or with the guy on the Staten Island ferry, they had names, they had little stories, they had little interactions. Do you think they moved the plot along at all? Do you think that you actually got, that he actually got something out of those interactions? Or were they just more illustrations of kind of what a sense of compassion and justice Joe actually had, even though he murdered people and engaged in a lot of criminal behavior?
I don't know that they necessarily moved the plot along, but in a mystery novel, I always really like when there's some like heavy, not heavy, but like sort of dense information and then a period of like quiet reflection. So like a dream sequence or like talking to a stranger. I think the pacing really works well for a mystery novel. So I thought it worked well in terms of like pacing, and it showed off Mosley's writing, which was my favorite part of this book, was just the way that he puts words together. So I liked it for that. I don't know that it drove the plot, but I thought it provided a much needed breath in everything that was going on in this book. But I don't know that he, like, I'm sure that those are the types of conversations, at least, where you catch your breath and you sort of reflect on, like, what he's just done and what he's going to do. And they're always, like, sort of in passing. So I thought it was believable, but not super sure that it like, spurred the plot.
Steve,
I was thinking Dan Barden was, he's still doing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a class from Dan when I was getting my MFA, and we just talked about story structure. And you need to just keep putting roadblocks in front of the protagonist. If they're trying to achieve something, there's got to be a roadblock. So there are no accidents in fiction or in you know, even a half an hour comedy series. They're trying to overcome these problems. So when these characters were introduced, I'm paying attention, thinking that this is some sort of hindrance that Joe's got to get around. But then it was nothing. So that part was just kind of sloppy. And distracting.
Yeah, I feel that. I love when I'm like reading a book or, you know, watching a certain director's movie where I know that every split second is important. And then so I go into every reading and even viewing experience thinking, okay, everything on the screen is important or every word in the book is important. And then I feel betrayed when it's not, which is like, fine, okay, not every director or writer, you know, operates that way or creates in that way. But I feel like for this, that's really what I was expecting. So I was in the same boat where at a certain point I was like, okay, these aren't like overtly important right now. They, you know, for the sort of like mood of the book and the vibe, I guess it's important. But yeah, I like to see every little roadblock or every sort of barrier become important in some way. And that was not, I didn't think that was the case here in an overt sense.
And those interactions could give you that pause that you need, right? After you get a big, you know, you get a big bite of the plot, and you can have that pause with some sort of inane interaction, but it's still restricting the plot from moving forward.
Yeah.
This was just extraneous, it felt like.
I'm trying to figure out if those interactions occurred right after he had these affairs with the women, because he had the interaction on the plane in Atlanta after he'd been with, what was her name?
Some girl at the bar.
And then he was on the ferry after he had gone to Peanut, Kentucky, or was that before?
That was in New York.
I think it was after. I think when he came back.
Yeah, he came back from the Peanut, Kentucky, and then he had the interaction on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
So was it a way to, like, wash him from having these affairs with the women or something? And, you know, oh, he's not such a misogynist narcissist or maybe a womanizing man. He actually cares about the woman on the plane and this gentleman on the ferry who seems to be very compassionate. And I don't know. It's kind of they were weird, though. They were kind of character development in a way, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just more trying to show us who he is. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they were necessary, in my opinion. Steve, is there anything you liked about this book?
I almost did, just about that whole Quiller thing. Like,
yeah. I think that was a missed opportunity. I mean, I think that was the most interesting part of the book.
That was the
whole point,
yeah.
You know, I just go off on some crazy tangent, but it was a swing and a miss. Like, that would have been very interesting to hate somebody and then have the author turn it around on you and say, you know what, you just judged this character too quickly. And he was playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers. Mm-hmm. And he was really working towards a greater good that you didn't even think about. Shame on you, right?
Right. And I thought that was kind of the promise of the blurb was that you were going to, that this black detective was going to have to defend somehow work for this horrible racist. Yeah. And it really didn't.
That's what I was. I mean, even on the very front, this little blurb and inside of the cover, that makes it sound like that's going to be the whole point of the book, which is why I was so excited. And then at the very end, that briefcase or suitcase or whatever with the 10,000 things, like the crime ledger, I thought that was so interesting.
Right.
I was like, could we have gotten this at page 30? It was, I thought that was the most interesting part of the book.
Tune in for the next Joe King Oliver novel.
I can't. I can't.
She already returned the first one.
I just returned it. I loved that. I thought it was so interesting. And it was like in my mind, I'm like, okay, what? Because I went into this book knowing, okay, I'm not going to like Quiller at first, but is there something that's going to bring him back or something that's redemptive about him? I thought the crime suitcase was redemptive. I think it's a good use of his talent, his brilliance, his organization, and his quest for, he's so on about truth, right? Truth and justice. I thought the briefcase was it. So we got to that at the very end, and I was like, and then he was like, oh, I gave it to somebody. I was like, great. Yeah, that was.
Now we'll never know who
my
killed
most
Kennedy.
Interesting. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
Like, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And was like, would have been, I think, sounds really unbelievable and just like fantastical, but I think that could have been made believable if we knew Quiller better. We didn't really know much about him besides that he hated minorities. And I was like, okay, but like, I thought this whole book was going to be an exploration of Quiller arriving at where he is and then sort of a redemptive journey. And then it was just Joe King going to a strip club in Atlanta and hooking up with the first person he saw. Oh. Literally, it was the first lady that walked into the bar, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think it was.
It was.
Quick.
It was so quick.
Not entirely unexpected.
So, if you needed a detective, would you hire Joe King Oliver?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I liked about the book. I liked the little details, and I know it was seemed misogynistic in how he described the women and their dresses and everything, but I think that's how detectives see things. They notice all the little details. That what makes them a good detective. I think it was a lost opportunity not focusing on the Quiller case. Specifically and even exclusively, but I found the writing, you know, because of the way he wrote it, he wrote it from a man's standpoint and from a guy who obviously has no issue with connecting with these women so quickly. And because of that, I think that's one of the reasons I liked it, is because it was that perspective of the detective, the noir. Mm-hmm. It was not a mystery by any stretch of the imagination. I didn't find it to be a mystery, but it was a detective novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a good distinction. It wasn't very mysterious, but it was it was definitely a detective novel.
Yeah, but I'd hire him, sure. The dude got it done. I mean, he just wouldn't make the right phone call. I mean, he's like, oh, I'm going to call this corporation in Denver, Colorado, and ask for this guy. And until I get him, I'm going to cajole people until I do.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. And that's what you want in a detective. I mean, you want somebody. I mean, Columbo never gave up. He would just keep pushing and pushing until he got a confession.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like we didn't get to see a lot of that, though. Like, when he was, like...
Yeah, more of that.
Actively detecting.
Yeah, and I would still love to know what the caskets were about. I still, you know, just give me an answer on the caskets.
It's a mystery.
Maybe it's in the next book. Maybe it was in the first book.
Yeah, that's the mystery. Yeah.
I would hire him. I just would hope he didn't meet any of the women in my family.
Warn him ahead of time.
Another notch on his holster. Belt. Yeah.
I wouldn't hire him. I wouldn't interact with him either. I just wouldn't. So, I think I'm probably too old for him, though.
Yeah.
At 34, he seems like he's skewing younger.
He did have a lot to say about his own grandma, though.
And his daughter. Yeah. How old was the daughter?
She was like 18.
Ew.
She was going to college.
She was getting ready to start college.
I thought she was 18, 19, maybe. Okay.
Yeah, she was younger in the first book.
Why is she
turned Harvard down or something.
I couldn't believe... He kept talking about, like, this is so dangerous. I'm in danger. My life is in danger. And then his daughter's like answering emails at his office. Like, is it that dangerous? Like, maybe then if this is like so high stakes, why is your teenage daughter working with you?
Yeah, he hadn't thought everything through.
It didn't make a lot of, like, he could hire anyone, I bet.
That's what he brought Olya in for. She taught him, she's teaching Asia how to.
That's what it seemed like.
How to take care of those guys.
Those two, I could see that. And it's at the very end, he was saying, like, I'll bring, you know, her into the next one. So I could see them being a trio. I just wouldn't. I'd rather it just be a duo with Olya and the daughter. I liked those two.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I know where everyone's going here, but would we recommend the book, Craig?
Sure. Why not? It's an easy read. It's quick. I'm still behind it.
All right. Christine?
I actually would still recommend it. Yeah. I don't think it was a waste of time. I would recommend it, especially for someone that really likes like you said, Craig, a detective novel. I think that's a great distinction. Yeah. I would probably still recommend it to someone that loves a detective novel and loves complexity and something to untangle. I don't think I'd recommend it to someone, though, that just wants to pick up a fun thriller on a Tuesday afternoon with a glass of wine. Or not Tuesday. On a Saturday afternoon with a glass of wine. So, yes and no.
Yeah, Steve.
I mean, if someone said I love detective novels, I was like, well, here's the only one that I read.
Take my copy.
I don't love detective novels. Here's this. But if somebody's, but you know, when you give a recommendation, that's a window to your soul, right? Like if a buddy of mine asks for a book recommendation, I want to give him something that he's going to like so he doesn't think I'm a jerk.
Right.
Right. So if you love detective novels, you may like this one. Otherwise, like, meh.
Yeah.
Also, I was judging him based on the cover, which I know.
Well, the cover is awesome.
Like, I mean, no, look at these, like, skinny jeans.
Those are skinny jeans. I didn't even notice that.
But it's such a great cover.
So this character, to me, didn't match the person in the book.
If someone said,
Christine, write, you know, 3,000 words of what you think this guy's life is based on nothing but this, I wouldn't write.
I thought he was just wearing a well-tailored suit,
but he's actually wearing skinny jeans and a jacket
with epaulets.
They look like Yeezys. Yeah, I don't know.
They do.
This set expectations that, in reality, to be completely honest, I felt like Joe King Oliver was probably just Walt.
By the way, did he, on the naming thing, did he name his daughter after an album by Steely Dan?
He didn't, and I forget what the backstory was. He didn't name her that. She named herself that. Her mother hated that. But she named her, she gave herself the name Asia, and I forget why that was.
Okay.
I guess I am willing to accept that I do not just typically enjoyed this kind of hard-boiled detective novel. Although, you know, The Maltese Falcon, I think, is a pretty great novel. Christine, I would say I agree with you. I feel almost misled. I was disappointed in... This was not what I thought this book was going to be.
Yeah.
It's super complicated. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know that I would recommend it to somebody who likes complicated stories because it's very difficult to follow.
You'd need the pin board like the detective.
Well, very honestly, I read it twice and the second time through, it was better. I mean, I could make more sense of the story the second time through.
Damn.
but I also had to read it twice.
Yeah. I don't think you should have to do that with a book.
You shouldn't have to do that unless you want to.
Right.
Like, I love it with finishing a book or finishing a movie, and I'm immediately like, okay, now that I get it, I got to do it again. But I don't want to do it out of frustration.
Or that you dread as the pages in your right hand are thinning, right?
Like, yes. Oh, this
then
couldn't
I start
fast
rationing
enough.
How quickly I read.
I do that too.
Yeah.
Rereading passages from
and I was
reading.
Not. I'm like, boom.
Yeah. I'm like, how quickly? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I sped through the second reading.
Yeah.
I was not looking forward to reading it again.
Dang.
But I did. Well, let's do some recommendations. Steve Woods, do you have anything for us?
So here's maybe one of the problems. I'm reading Demon Copperhead right now, which is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So then you put these next to each other and
Demon Copperhead.
It's... So that's excellent. I'm only about 100 pages in. And I love it.
Yeah. It's Barbara Kingsolver. Mm. It's kind of a modern retelling of David Copperfield.
Correct. Yeah.
And it is really set in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really something. Great character. Great narrative voice.
And this is a woman that's writing a young boy so far in the book. And she's very talented.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good. Great, great recommendation. Christine.
Yeah. So my recommendation is actually the book that I read right before this one. I saved it to read before this because I thought they would pair well together. It's called Winter Counts. I had to look up the author's name because it's very long, but it's Winter Counts by David Heska Wanblee Wyden. And it's about this sort of vigilante who lives on a reservation in South Dakota, I think. And it's about this sort of vigilante seeking justice for his reservation. And then his nephew gets involved and family gets involved. It was great. I thought it was really intricate and really interesting characters and really well handled. I will say the writing style feels more YA than what Walter Mosley did, but I still really enjoyed it. And that's a book that I couldn't put down. And as pages were thinning, I was like, no, that's one I'd read again for sure.
Yeah. Winter Counts.
Yep. And just came out, I think, in March. So pretty new release.
Yeah. That sounds great. Craig.
Well, my lovely wife got me The Creative Act, A Way of Being by Rick Rubin. I love it. It's completely just, you just read it. There's no real focus to it other than just reinforcing what creativity is and how to be creative. It's just a really nice, fun read. I'm also reading 10% Happier by Dan Harris, which is a good one.
Yeah.
And then on my nightstand is Surrender by Bono and Claire and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro.
All right.
Those are all good.
I'm an Ishiguro fan, too. Yeah. So I mean, I've admitted I'm not much of a hard-boiled detective story reader or movie watcher, but I do like a good heist flick every now and then. That's kind of what I like in that.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Heist flick,
yeah.
Love that.
But I have also expressed my love for Kate Atkinson at least a couple of times on this show, and so my recommendation is the first book of Kate Atkinson's in a series that features Jackson Brody, who is another ex-cop turned private eye. The book's called Case Histories, and boy, it really starts with a bang. Three seemingly unconnected crimes that he gets involved with, and they're all, you know, some years after they occur. And this, it was a really big breakthrough book for Kate Atkinson. She's probably my favorite living novelist, and Jackson Brody really is a great character, and she's written like another four of them after that, and they're all worth reading. Yeah, I another plug for Kate Atkinson after, you know, Life After Life and A God in Ruins, I think, are her masterpieces. They're just kind of stunning. But boy, these Jackson Brody books, starting with Case Histories, are really, really good. And then speaking of history, that's our show. You can find notes for this and all of our shows in the Radio Free Book Club blog on Medium.com. Please consider following us. Drop us a note on Facebook. You can stream the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Our show is produced by the inimitable Oreo Jones for 99.1 WQRTLP in Indianapolis. For Christine Hudson, Craig Von Dalen, Steve Woods, and all the members of Radio Free Book Club, I'm Ken Honeywell. Thanks for listening. And join us next month when we'll try to have some answers for the newest novel from Rebecca Mackay, I Have Some Questions For You. Until then, read a book.